With them he shall push. Literally, it ought to read, shall gore the people together to the ends of the earth. Now, who are these horns? They are the 10,000s of Ephraim, and they are the thousands of Manasseh. Now, to the King James, there's no way, just no way those translators could ever see those lost tribes becoming the horns of the charging ream, playing a part in his judgmental work. It's not, however, merely by men alone that this will be done, for David sings, Thou art my King, O God. Through thee will we push down our enemies. Through thy name will we tread them under that rise up against us. This is the church and the saints, incorporating them all, Old and New Testament, tribes of Israel, tribes of Judah, and the church, and their charging bull king. Let me read to you about the ream. It has long been, this is Joseph Seiss, it has long been a question what animal is meant by the ream, which is so often referred to in the ancient scriptures and which translators have generally called the unicorn. But modern research and discovery have served to clear up the subject in a manner entirely satisfactory. The ream is not a one-horned creature like the rhinoceros, as has generally been supposed, but a pure animal of the ox kind, though wild, untamable, fierce, and terrible. Two passages prove that it was a great two-horned and mighty creature, now, so far as known, entirely extinct, but once common in northwestern Asia, Assyria, and Middle Europe. Remains of it have of late years been discovered in the north of Palestine. And Caesar, in the account of his wars, describes it as being hunted in the Hercynian forests in his day. It was known as the primeval ox or wild bull, different altogether from the bison or the great antelope sometimes taken for it. It was a formidable animal, scarcely less than the elephant in size, but in nature, color, and form, a true ox. Its strength and speed were very great, and it was so fierce that it did not spare man or beast when it caught sight of him. It was wholly intractable, could not be habituated or domesticated to man, no matter how young it was taken. This fact is set out in the book of Job, chapter 39, verses 9 to 12, where it said, Will the ream be willing to serve thee or abide by thy crib? Canst thou bind the ream with his band in the furrow, or will he harrow the valleys after thee? Wilt thou trust him because his strength is great, or wilt thou leave thy labor to him? Wilt thou believe him that he will bring home thy seed and gather it into thy barn? And in that context of Job, God was mocking by stating the impossible. No, Job, you wouldn't do that. The ream was untamable. That's Taurus. And it is that side of God that Isaiah 13 reveals. The coming judge, I will punish the world for their evil, and the wicked for their iniquity. I will cause the arrogancy of the proud to cease, and will lay low the haughtiness of the terrible. Every one that is found shall be thrust through. Speaking of that day, if you want scriptures that fit Taurus, write down Isaiah 34, verses 2 to 8. Bullinger quotes from another translation than King James. For the Lord hath indignation against all the nations, and fury against all their host. He hath utterly destroyed them. He hath delivered them to the slaughter. The Lord hath a sacrifice in Bozrah, and a great slaughter in the land of Edom. And the wild oxen, Reem, shall come down with them. And the bullocks with the bulls, and their land shall be drunken with blood, and their dust made fat with fatness, for it is the day of the Lord's vengeance, the year of recompense in the controversy of Zion. Behold, the Lord cometh forth out of his place to punish the inhabitants of the earth for their iniquity. The earth also shall disclose her blood. The earth shall no more cover her slain. That's Isaiah 26:21. It could go on and on and on and on. In Revelation 19, he comes with the saints behind him to tread the winepress of the fierceness and wrath of Almighty God. However, when you're on the track, the decans elaborate and fill in the detail. Three decans teach the further truths of this first chapter called Taurus. The charging bull with his saints, the Pleiades and the Hyades, resting in his strength. The charging bull with the two horns coming in judgment. But is no mere bull. That symbol tells of his ferocity. It is a man, a glorious man, even the Son of Man, to borrow Bullinger's words. This is the first development shown in the first of the three constellations belonging to the sign. The picture is of Orion, the coming prince, the light breaking forth in the Redeemer, Orion. Now again, there are people that are troubled because Orion has a club in one hand and holds a lion's head in the other hand. They say, well, I thought the lion was the sign of Christ. The devil's the great imitator. And he is a roaring lion, the scripture says, going about seeking whom he may devour. And Orion, the coming prince, another way, as in Old Testament worship practices, one turtle dove was slain to symbolize a certain work of Christ, another had the blood sprinkled on its wings and released. Or in the offerings of the Old Testament, the priest, the sacrifice, and the offerer were distinct. But they all taught in the types of the Old Testament the one all-encompassing work of Christ, who was the offering. He offered himself, was the offerer. He offered himself. He was the sin offering in our behalf. He took our place. He was the sinner making the offering, but he was also the sinless one, as taught in the same Acts, and he was the high priest making the offering. Likewise here, in the coming judge, he shifts from the ferocious charging bull picture to Orion, the mighty prince. Orion. He is pictured in the ancient Dendera Egyptian zodiac as a man coming forth, pointing to the three bright stars, Regal, Bellatrix, and Beltegues, as his. His name is given as Hagat, or Hagat, which means this is he who triumphs. Each of those bright stars mean the foot that crushes, Regal, Bellatrix, quickly coming or swiftly destroying, Beltegues, the coming of the branch. The names are as ancient as mankind, and yet they follow God's pattern laid down in the skies. The hieroglyphic characters read Oer, or Or. Orion was anciently spelt Oerion, from the Hebrew root, which means light. So that Orion means coming forth as light. The ancient Akkadians in the lower waters, that ancient, those two most ancient of cultures, the Sumerians and the Akkadians, the ancient Akkadians, they named it Urana, the light of heaven. Orion is the most brilliant of all the constellations. And when he comes to the meridian, he's accompanied by several adjacent constellations of great splendor. There is then above the horizon the most glorious view of the celestial bodies that the starry firmament affords. And this magnificent view is visible to all the habitable world because the equinoctial line passes nearly through the middle of Orion. Aratus, the ancient poet, sings of him. Eastward beyond the region of the bull stands great Orion, and who, when night is clear, beholds him gleaming bright, shall cast his eyes in vain to find a sign more glorious in all the heaven. The constellation is mentioned by name as being perfectly well known both by name and appearance in the time of Job. Its Hebrew word, Chasil, means a strong one, a hero, or a giant. Its picture, if I could get it in close, he comes to conquer. He has his foot on the evil one, his sword. If you could get in as close as you can here to this sword. His sword. His sword shows the head of a lamb, and I can't seem to get it in a clear picture tonight. His head shows, the hilt of the sword is a head of a lamb and forms a cross. This bright light coming is probably the most heroic of all the symbols in ancient myths. He comes as the conquering one to take the head of the roaring lion, the most ancient of zodiacal signs. We're coming into the area where mythology and the Greeks and the Romans begin to change the signs. And you can understand, if you will think for a moment, once that God's original message began to be deteriorated, Satan would try to destroy and warp the truths that hurt him the most. We saw Capricorn, most distorted in the myths of all, and the concept of the dying lamb that brings the life of the fish became the playground of sensuality to the destruction of the meaning and the sin that Paul talked about of worshiping the creature instead of the Creator. When you get to these days of judgment, you come to areas that Grecian and Roman and idealistic views of history and progressive views of history could not cope with, so they changed the ancient signs. The most ancient of signs, and you've got to get over to Gemini before it's part of its constellations. But this mighty Orion has his foot on what the Greeks would call the hare. But the most ancient of signs, now this is not part of Taurus sign, the hare is part of Gemini, it's one of the decans of Gemini. But the hare is a later Grecian distortion. The most ancient of zodiacs had an unclean bird standing on a serpent. An evil combo of an evil bird and serpent. And many of the zodiacal charts will have an absolute contradiction. They will name this Lepus, the hare, or the enemy. And the enemy and the hare are miles apart. Wouldn't the devil like to change it, if he can, to a poor little old harmless rabbit? But Orion is standing with his foot, as he does earlier with his foot on the heart of the scorpion, is standing with his foot on the evil one, an evil bird. Now, when we come to Gemini, we'll have to correct this ancient picture of the hare and show you that behind the Grecian changing of the ancient sign from an evil bird on a snake to the hare. We'll go behind it when we come to that. But now my concern is with Orion. He has the club in one hand. He has the head of the roaring lion. He comes to conquer. His foot is on the enemy, erroneously changed by the Greeks into a hare. His sword is a combination of a lamb and a cross. The victorious sword. Now let me read. A little below in the sword is a very remarkable nebulous star. The common telescope will show it's a beautiful nebula. A powerful telescope reveals it as consisting of collections of nebulous stars. These again being surrounded with faint luminous points which still more powerful telescopes would resolve into separate stars. This beautifully is set forth the brilliancy and glory of that light which shall break forth. The picture presents us with the light of the world. His left foot is significantly placed upon the head of the enemy. He is girded with a glorious girdle, studded with three brilliant stars, and upon this girdle is hung a sharp sword. Its handle proves that this mighty prince has come forth in a new character. He is again proved to be the lamb that was slain, for the hilt of this sword is in the form of the head and body of a lamb. In his right hand he lifts on high his mighty club, while in his left he holds forth the token of his victory, the head and skin of the roaring lion. We ask, who is this mighty man? The names of the stars give us the answer. The brightest, in the right shoulder, is named Beltagiz. Right here, in the right shoulder. I think I'm going to quit taking pictures and talk to the people with the radio. You know where the right shoulder is. It means the coming of the branch. You just need to get a feel for the stars that always confirm. The names of the stars from most ancient times within the constellation confirm its central meaning. The brightest star on the right shoulder is named with a name that means the coming of the branch. The next brightest star is in the left foot, and it's named Regal or Regol, which means the foot that crusheth. And that foot is right over the head of the enemy, an evil bird in the ancient ones, meaning the foot that crusheth. The foot's lift up and placed immediately over the head of the enemy in the very act of crushing it. The next star in the left shoulder is called Bellatrix, which means quickly coming or swiftly destroying. The name of the fourth star, one of the three in the belt, the fourth brightest, carries us to the old story and reminds us that he was the wounded one, for its name means Al-Nitak, the wounded one. The star in the right leg is called Sif, which means bruised, and is the very word in Genesis 3:15, which was the first of God's prophecies of the son, seed of a woman, bruising the head of the serpent. Other stars are named Al-Rai, who bruises, who breaks, and Thabit, which means treading on. Other names of stars in this symbol, or this particular supporting decan, mean the branch, the mighty, the ruler, the prince, the mighty, the strong, coming and coming forth. Such is the cumulative testimony of Orion stars, which day after day and night after night show forth this knowledge, afterwards written in the book, and your own book that was given to you will have a lot of the passages that refer to it. We have in Orion glory, the conquering one who comes to take the head of the enemy, bearing the sword that marks his work on the cross, carrying the club, crushing the head of the enemy. But more important, the next decan is that mighty river, the river of wrath that breaks forth on his enemies. It's not to scale. It's a gigantic river that flows through the heavens. You get a better picture of it in this first book that I showed you that shows all of them together. Here it is. You'll see coming forth, his foot now left out of this picture is the enemy, which is erroneously by the Greeks designed as the hare, whose head's right under the foot. But flowing forth from the foot of mighty Orion is the river of fire that spreads all through the heavens. The river of judgment. Now the bull charges forth in his wrath. He is supported in meaning as the mighty Orion, who takes the head of the roaring lion, lifts the club high, whose bright stars tell his meaning, whose foot is about to crush the enemy, which is a part of the Gemini sign, and out of his foot flows the fiery river of God's judgment and God's wrath. The day of judgment is what is being symbolized in this fourth chapter. This river, Eridanus, the river of the judge, comes forth from the downcoming foot of Orion. It is the river under the feet of Orion. It consists of 84 stars. The brightest star at the mouth of the river bears the name of Acherenar, the after part of the river. So the stars tell you where it begins and where it ends. The star down at the bottom of the river means the after part of the river as it flows to the downward regions. The next star at the source of the river is named Cursa. You don't have to do much with the cognate there to figure out its meaning. Cursa, which means bent down. So at the start of the river of wrath, flowing from the foot of Orion who crushes the head of the enemy, is the river of God's fiery judgment going forth. In vain, as you follow its course, the claw of the sea monster, the symbol of the devil, tries to stop its course at about the second bend. But in vain, it keeps flowing on, the river of God's wrath. It's the river of the judge. According to the Grecian fables, something went wrong with the chariot of the sun, and a universal conflagration was threatened. In the trouble, Phaeton was killed and hurled into this river in which he was consumed with its fire. All the myths associated with judgment and with fire. Daniel sees this very river in his vision in the seventh chapter. It says, I beheld till the thrones were placed, and one that was Ancient of Days did sit. His throne was fiery flames, and the wheels thereof burning fire. A fiery stream issued and came forth from before him. And others I could name. The third Decan is the shepherd. Later myths erroneously calling the charioteer because they see loose reins in his hand. That's nothing but the bands unleashed that bound those two tribal peoples, the house of Joseph and the house of Judah, in an earlier sign. I hope the picture's better on the monitor than the one I'm looking at. But you see in his arms the she-goat, looking with fear toward the charging bull, seeing a side of our Lord that frightens. And in the left hand are two little kids. Now, who's this she-goat, and who are these two little kids, and who is this seated person with the loosed bands in his hand? Well, I'll get to it later. And I'll leave you there. All I want to get to at this point is that we are at the day of judgment that is unfolding in these signs to culminate in Leo.